So our story so far, right? We've been talking about the concept of Malacha Shem Mitzricha L'Gufa, essentially establishing that there is some p'tur called Malacha Shem Mitzricha L'Gufa. Whether or not this p'tur really exists is a topic of machlokas in the Gemara, and actually a machlokas later than that as well. It's machlokas between Rav Shimon and Rav Yehuda. Rav Shimon is the Mekel and Rav Yehuda is the Machmir. And we seem to paskin, like Rav Shimon, that Malacha Shem Mitzricha L'Gufa is Pater. The Rambam does not hold that way. The Rambam holds like Rav Yehuda is Chayiv. And the truth is, the Shulchan Aruch does quote the Rambam's opinion. But the later poskim assume that the overall view of the Shulchan Aruch is that Malacha Shem Mitzricha L'Gufa is indeed Pater. And therefore, we could say that we hold like that. We discussed a little bit the Machlokas HaRishonim as to what is the definition of Malacha Shem Mitzricha L'Gufa. Does it mean a Malacha that's being done for non-Mishkanian purposes? Or does it mean a Malacha that's being done for a negative purpose, which causes all kinds of questions, which we spent some time talking about. And we talked about how to paskin a little bit on that issue. We talked about various explanations of Rabbi Yehuda's position. Why is he Machmir on this? We saw probably three or four ways to address that. And then we discussed also the question of what if you're doing a malacha for an external motivation? Your purpose is not so much the issue as it is your motivation. You've got a gun to your head. You're a doctor. You have to work. Your parents force you to, whatever it is. We talked about various applications of that and a little bit of its relevance to this week's parsha and the Mekosha Shetzim. And then we talked about the concept of a tolda in general, and in what ways a tolda by Malacha Shem Mitzricha L'Gufa might be a little bit different. All right, so far so good. So now let's talk a little bit about if we assume that there is an Issur Drabanan of a Malacha Shem Mitzricha L'Gufa, it's not mutter. So is it simply that it's an Issur Drabanan, or is there a little bit more to it? So here there is what to discuss, that there is some basis to say that a Malacha Shem Mitzricha L'Gufa is not a straightforward Issur Drabanan. But it may be that it's a very severe Drabanan, or perhaps even one might go so far as to even say it's an Issur D'Oraisa, just that you're Pater. So why would you say such a thing? Why would you differentiate between this and other Issurim D'Rabanan, other such Pturim? Why would you maintain that a Malacha Shem Mitzricha L'Gufa should be treated more severely? V'halacha l'maisa, in theory. Aaron?
You're doing the maisa.
You're doing the maisa, okay, so explain that a little bit more. That's on the right track to something.
And the Torah asks you to dig a hole, and you're digging a hole.
Right. So I think what you're getting at is that you're doing the full-blown maisa. You're doing everything correct. We just happen to have this exclusion that it's for a different purpose or it's for a negative purpose. So one could be chayker in general. One could open up the question that, let's say, for example, we were to associate Malacha Shem Mitzricha L'Gufa with Malachas Machshavas. So we discussed that a little bit as well. Is that really the source for Malacha Shem Mitzricha L'Gufa? So one could ask the question, what's the nature of Malachas Machshavas in defining Shabbos? And maybe we'll spend some time at a later day talking a little bit more about what Malachas Machshavas even is. But you could essentially ask the question that should we say that Malachas Machshavas is a complete disqualifier, that if you don't have Malachas Machshavas, you don't have a Malach at all? Malach is defined completely by being Machshavas? Or should we say that no, you can have a Malacha without Machshavas, but Machshavas is a condition to be Chayiv? So that might be relevant here. If you say Malacha Shem Mitzricha L'Gufa is a deficiency in Machshavas, so what does that mean? Does it mean that it's nothing? It's simply not a Malacha? In which case the Torah simply did not asur it at all. And therefore Chazal could come and create Nisa D'Rabbanan, but this is not a Avera Kihuzet. Or should we say that no, it really is the Malacha. And it really is, in every sense of the word, included in what the Torah prohibits in Malacha. It's just that you're exempt, that you are disconnected for it for some reason because of your lack of interest in the tachlis of the Mishkan. And you know, there's what you could speculate about exactly how that works. It's an interesting line to pursue. But we could say that essentially it's a full malacha, and you're simply off the hook. So if that's the case, you could understand, maybe, I think this is a little bit what Aaron's getting at, why maybe we'll be more machmir. We'll say that this is not a straight Issur d'Rabbanan in the traditional sense, but this is really pretty close to an Issur d'Oraisa. This is pretty much doing the malacha. There just happens to be a technicality that gets you off the hook.
And so you wouldn't be able to do like a d'Rabbanan and d'Rabbanan for this or something?
So that's really the nafka mina, not necessarily that specifically, but there's a whole host of kulas that we associate with d'Rabbanans. And to what extent do we allow them? So some of the Rishonim say, for example, that the Mokum Chola, we don't allow it. You might normally allow a Chola to do a Din D'Rabbanan, not a Chola Sheyesh B'Sakana, but a Chola Sheyim B'Sakana. So some of the Rishonim maintain that we don't allow a Malacha Shein Tzrich L'Gufa for a Chola. Or Reb Shlomo Zalman Arbach has a Tshuva in which he maintains that we still prohibit Malacha Shein Tzrich L'Gufa, even Bein HaShmashos. The Gemara says that anything that's Mishum Shvus, if something is a Derabanan, so normally we don't really prohibit it in Ashmashos. But Malacha Shein Tzrich L'Gufa, Reb Shlomo Zalman says, is not in that category. It doesn't have these leniencies, even if it is an Issur d'Rabbanan. On the other hand, you find those who say differently. So, for example, the Dvar Yehoshua, we mentioned a little bit the other day. So he writes that if you have a Kavod HaBrios situation, so Kavod HaBrios will push off Malacha Shein Tzrich L'Gufa because L'maisa it's the Derabbanan. And therefore it should be allowed. You find other discussions about various kulas mid'Rabbanan. So for example, another area where it does seem to apply is the question of Tsar. That the Magen Avraham interprets the Psak of the Shulchan Aruch that if you have a malacha shein tzricha l'gufa that's necessary for the purposes of alleviating tzar, so the Magen Avraham seems to say it's permitted based on the issue the Shulchan Aruch talks about. At the moment, none of you have wives who are nursing mothers, but God willing, someday you will. So that's an issue that comes up if a mother is nursing on Shabbos. So let's say the baby doesn't need the milk, but still the mother often wants to pump because it creates a tremendous discomfort if the milk stays there. So the question is, pumping seems to be a malacha, seems to involve the malacha called dash. So the question is, can you do dash if it's for a different purpose, not for the purpose of extracting the milk? Presumably dash is about extracting the milk and extracting whatever it is from the inside, in this case milk, and if you're not interested in that, you're interested in something else, in relieving suffering. So then you could argue very convincingly that this is a malacha shein tzrich l'gufa. So that is often issued as a psak halacha l'maisa. There are different ways in which it's advised. The Magen Avraham, the Beis Yosef also writes that if the milk immediately goes lakilkul, if the milk is going to right away go to waste, so then he thinks even Rabbi Yehuda would allow it. Because as we discussed, that Rabbi Yehuda, we spent some time on this the other day, that Rabbi Yehuda probably is not philosophically opposed to Malacha Shein Tzrich L'Gufa, as evidenced by the fact that he agrees that Mekalkel is Pater. So how is that relevant to us? It means that he acknowledges that a malacha has to have some purpose. He just has a broader definition of what's considered to be a purpose, what's not considered to be a purpose. It's very like the machlokas here. But if here the extracted milk is completely going to be destroyed, so there are those who recommend pumping into a kli that has soap in it or something like that, which will make the milk immediately useless. So that may be at least a malacha shein tzrich l'gufa, maybe even more than that, because like the Beis Yosef is saying, maybe it's even Mekalkel, which maybe Rabbi Yehuda would agree with. Also, Tosfos and Daf Ayin Gimel Mibeis, Tosfos sounds like Disha might be a malacha, which Dash might be a malacha, which is defined by its goal.
Right,
that's where Tosfos brings it up, that there the Gemara says that if you prune a tree, so we discussed this the other day, so that's called Zomer. So then the Gemara says, if it's also that you're interested in the tree, you're interested in the branch, so Zomer v'tzarech la'etzim, so then the Gemara says, yikvichayev shtayim, yikvichayev for Zomer, and also for Kotzer. So Tosus explains that this is this idea that you need the Eitzim, that implication is that if you just cut off trees, cut off branches, and you're not interested in the branches, so even though it looks like an act of kotzer, but it's not, so you might think that's malacha shein tzricha l'gufa. You might think that because normally kotzer is you're interested in what you're getting, and here you're not, so it's malacha shein tzricha l'gufa. So Tosfos over there says, no, this is true even according to Rabbi Yehuda. There's a minority view in Rishonim that it's only according to Rishonim, but Tosfos over there says that even Rabbi Yehuda would accept this exemption, because it says that the whole malacha of kotzer is defined by you needing the item. And if you don't need the item, it's not kotzer for a different purpose. That's not kotzer. So you need to have interest in the branches for it to be kotzer in the first place. And then Tosfos throws in this example, as Aaron's pointing out, that Dasha is like that also, that if you do Disha and you're not interested in what's coming out, so then it's not even the malacha of Dash. So it's a question whether it's even the malacha shein tzricha l'guf. That's why there's some ambiguity as to how far to take this psak and what to read into it. But it sounds like you could maybe get a klal from here that b'makom tzar, malacha shein tzricha l'guf is permitted. Hi.
Two questions. The Magen Avraham said it was mutter even if it, for tzar, even if it's not halach
ibud, or that's how he's interpreting the psak of Shulchan Aruch, which sounds like he's saying that malach shein tzrich l'gufa is the issue, but you
and
could.
That's
what it sounds like. Yeah.
Okay. And also, when the suggestion that if you milk, like,
see if cow, did you get my makomish? What about milking a cow?
Milk cow into food and that's permitted. Would it be the same thing here?
I mean, so it's a big.
Ignoring the chazal, you said it would have to actually, like, you know, it would have to fully be absorbed. I'm saying, like, if you fulfill all those requirements.
That was a big machlokas. I mean, you make reference to the Chazon Ish. There was a big fight in there. It's as well a whole story about how to deal with that. It's a very related issue. There's some differences, but it's a very related issue. So that's a part of the question, exactly, to address that.
And where is this, the part of the Shulchan Aruch here about...
So I was looking if I put it on the Mar Makoma, so I'm not actually seeing it here. The section here about Chumras Isser, Shalom says, Magen Avraham in Hilchos Dash. I'll have to give it to you later.
Okay.
It's over there, in the place.
So if the Magen Avraham holds that way,
yes,
then that means that he goes by the consideration of Malach Hashem to Gufa, that it's a Derabanan, like, fully.
That's what it sounds like. You know, but again, you can piece together these parts and maybe come up with different calculations. This also, essentially, it's interesting, this is also possibly a machlokas Rav Shechter in the Meiri, which is not the normal way. The reason I'm just calling attention is because it's interesting, because you have to know how to read these things carefully. So Rav Shechter has a discussion about this in Eretz HaTzvi. Rabbi Sachs also has a discussion about this in Sefer Chemdes Yamin, where if you pay attention to what he says, you know, he doesn't phrase it like that. But if you pay attention to what he says, essentially he's saying that he disagrees with the Meiri in a fundamental way. Because the Mishnah talks about an Isser of, well, the Mishnah talks about a Heter of extinguishing a flame for a Chola Sheyesh Bo Sakana. So the question is, why don't we say that a Chola Sheyesh Bo Sakana, we should also extinguish a flame? Because extinguishing a flame is presumably only an Isser D'Rabbanan, because presumably it's Malach Shein Tzricha L'Gufa. Right? That normally you extinguish a flame so that you could have something created by the remnants of the flame. Here, if you want the light to be off, so then it's presumably a Malach Shein Tzricha L'Gufa. So why don't we say it's Yumutter anyway for a Chol? So if you look in the Meiri, that is in the Marmar Kumbas here, this is the Meiri in Chav Testament Beis in Bava Medlikin. So if you look in that Meiri, so he gives three answers why not. Basically, three reasons why this should be different. He tries to sharpen a little bit the parameters of what we allow for a chola, what type of assistance we need, and he struggles with the issue, and he comes up with three answers. So Rav Shechter basically discusses in his Sefer that this is a broader topic that he has, that when it comes to Derabbanans in Shabbos, he says there are two different types, at least, of Dinim D'Rabbanan in Hilchos Shabbos. You have what you could call a Gezeira D'Rabbanan, like we're familiar with B'chala Torah Kula, an Isser D'Rabbanan that's there to protect you from violating an Isser D'Oraisa. Or you could have a Malacha D'Rabbanan. which essentially means it basically follows all the rules of a malacha, but it's not in the Torah itself, asr, chazal asr, because it has the properties of malacha without necessarily being included in the Torah's definition. So therefore, one could ask, do you assume that malacha shenitzrich legufa is a gzeira d'rabbanan, that basically it's mutter really, but Chazal were afraid you might come to do a malacha, so therefore they asked it? Or should you say more than that, that it's not a gzeira d'rabbanan, it's really a malacha d'rabbanan. Chazal felt it should have all the properties of a malacha, and therefore asked it for that reason. So essentially, a malacha d'rabbanan, it's worthwhile reading the piece inside, a malacha d'rabbanan has chumras for the most part, more than Gzeira d'Rabbanan. It's not subject to the kulas of Gzeira d'Rabbanan, but there are some ways in which it's different. So, for example, we spoke about the other day that a malacha has certain requirements to it, that a malacha has to be active, has to be something that you're doing in order for it to be a malacha. So that would extend to a d'Rabbanan as well, that if it doesn't follow the basic rules of a malacha, then it can't be a malacha d'Rabbanan. So there are chumras and kulas, essentially. But what Rav Schechter suggests in his piece is that perhaps and this is what Rav Sachs is discussing as well in his Sefer Chemdas Yamin, that one could say that the issue is how do we view a malacha shenitzrich legufa in terms of its chumras ha'iser? Do we say that it is a gezeira d'rabbanan, or do we say that it's a malacha d'rabbanan and it should be more chumr? So that could also answer then this question in the Gemara and the Mishnah Chav Testament Beis, why do we not allow it for a chola? So we don't allow it for a chola because it's a malacha d'rabbanan, and therefore malacha d'rabbanan is not subject to these kulas. So that's why I'm saying it's the machlokas for Shechter and the Miri, because it's easy to miss this, but this is essentially what it boils down to, is that you could read it, okay, here's four different answers to the question. Miri's three answers and Shechter's answer. Or you could look more broadly and see that the Meiri is dealing with a certain premise. He's dealing with a premise that this should have been mutter, and we have to find some technical reason here why it's not. And Shechter is suggesting, no, maybe it shouldn't be mutter. Maybe it's a malacha d'rabbanan, and that's not subject to a heter for chola shein bo sakana. So essentially, they are arguing on the fundamental premise of the question. Before getting to the answers reflect a certain attitude towards the question, and therefore there is a core machlokas as far as how to view this.
Can you explain more malacha d'rabbanan, like other examples?
Well, I can give other possible examples. That's the thing. So, for example, in that sefer there, he talks about whether the example of the category of shnayim shaso that the Gemara says in the beginning of the Masechta and later, Sadi Gimel also. The Gemara says that if you have two people who do a malacha together, so that's a p'tur. So the question could be asked, what does it mean it's a p'tur? Do we say that the malacha is fundamentally incomplete, and therefore it's p'tur for that reason? Or do we say that, no, the malacha is fine, but you're not really shaykh the malacha because somebody else is doing it with you, so therefore you're exempt, but the malacha really is there. So if we assume that there's an issa d'rabbana, let's step on something. Did that. So if we assume that there's a Issa d'Rabbanan of Shnayim Shaso, so the same question could come up. Do you say that Shnayim Shaso means that it is a Gzeira d'Rabbanan, you might come to do a Malacha, or should we say that it's a Malacha d'Rabbanan, that essentially Chazal perceived this as fully matching a Malacha, just having a technical exemption, and therefore they made it a Malacha d'Rabbanan? So on that point, Rav Schechter inclines towards saying it's a gzeira d'rabbanan, it's more mekel. Because if you assume that the issue is, and we're not learning this sugya right now, so we won't go into all the proofs at this point, but if you say that a malacha has to have a maisa connected to it, and here the maisa is fundamentally flawed because you're sharing it with somebody else artificially, so then if that's not a malacha, so then, says Rav Schechter, it can't be a malacha d'rabbanan either. Can't be a malacha d'rais or d'rabbanan, and therefore, to whatever extent there's a d'rabbanan, it's got to be a gzeira d'rabbanan. But as we mentioned, there are chumras also, because one of the fundamental points of being a malacha means that it has to be, as we said, active. So you can't have a malacha that has a passive form. But Gzeira Drabbanan maybe can have a passive form. So we find, for example, in Hilchos Bishul, so we have all kinds of Drabbanas which are essentially passive, you know, by leaving the food on the oven, leaving food on the fire, things like that. The Egle Tal says that Refuah is, it's possible to violate it passively because it's a Gzeira Drabbanan. There are perhaps other examples where it's kind of a quirk that there is, in a sense, a chumrah to the Drabbanans because they're not malachas. So there is a lot to figure out about that. Okay, so that's a fundamental question about malachas shein tzrichu l'gufa. So let's, just for the next few minutes, try to establish the following issue. So we'd like to talk next about the concept of davar she'eino miskaven and psik reisha. Psik reisha, usually for convenience, you refer to that as the sugya, but psik reisha is really a modifying term. That first, the issue is davar she'eino miskaven, which davar she'eino miskaven is theoretically an exclusion not only in Hilchos Shabbos, but in Kol HaTorah Kula. That if somebody is doing an action, and that action could cause another action, so then that's what we call a davar she'eino miskaven. And it's a machlokes, once again, Reb Shimon and Reb Yehuda, whether that is usur. So that is concept A, and it's basically a flowchart, because you say like this, if something is a davar she'eino miskaven, is it mutter or is it asur? Well, according to Rabbi Yehuda, it's asur. According to Rabbi Shimon, then question B, is it a psik reisha, meaning is it definitely going to happen, or is it only something that will possibly happen? If it's only possibly going to happen, then mutter. If it's definitely going to happen, so then next question on the flowchart, is it desirable, is it nichole, or is it undesirable, is it lo nichole? So essentially you have it's a modifier of a modifier. Nichole is a modifier of segregation, which is a modifier of davar she'eino miskaven. So before we can really talk about that, so let's try to understand how does it relate to malacha she'eino tzrichu l'gufa. What's the difference between a malacha she'eino tzrichu l'gufa and a davar she'eino miskaven? So the most common approach, it's not the only approach, but the most common approach is expressed by the Kesef Mishnah. Kesef Mishnah essentially says as follows, and this is a very commonly held understanding of how to understand this, and you see it's on the Marmar Komos list here, this is the second item, Hilchos Shabbos Perek Aleph Halacha Zayin, D'Ramaschul HaHefresh, right? the difference between the two. So Kesef Mishnah essentially explains like this. A malacha she'eino tzrichu l'gufa, you're doing the full malacha, but you're doing it for a different purpose. A davar she'eino miskaven, you're doing something else. And that, and you're doing that with full intent, but you're doing something else with full intent. And that something else will provoke another action, or might provoke another action. And that other action is a malach. So that's the difference that's commonly understood, and that's what the Kesef Mishnah happens to be quoting of Avram Bino Shel HaRambam. That's how he explains the distinction. So, based on that, a number of Achronim ask a question. The Keves HaMishnah, the Kapos Tmorah, a few others, they're concerned about this. Because they say as follows. They say, if that's really the case, so which is worse, so to speak? Which is closer to a real Aveira? What do you think? In that formulation, if you say, define worse as being closer to a full act of Chulashat. So Malach Shein Tzrich L'Gufa. Why? Why do you say that? That's what it sounds like, right? It sounds like between those two, Malach Shein Tzrich L'Gufa is worse because there you're actually doing the Malacha. You happen not to want, and you're knowingly doing the Malacha. You just happen to have a different interest. While in the case of a davar she'eino miskaven, you're not intentionally doing the Malacha in the first place. Or directly doing the Malacha in the first place.
But if you know it's going to happen,
Maybe. So let's, but before we get to that, so let's just, in the more basic level, so since you're not even doing it directly or intentionally, either one, so therefore it sounds like Malach Shein Tzrich L'Gufa is worse. Okay, so let's say it's worse. Why is that Akasha? So it's Akasha because he's coming from the premise that Psik Reisha is worse. Why is he coming from that premise? It's a very tricky point. It's a very complex point. He's basically, the reason the Kapos Tamarim and the Mekevus Mishnah and others are saying they find this difficult is because they assume Davar Sheinu Miskaven is worse. And here, this distinction makes Malach Hashem Tzvich Legufa worse. Why is Davar Sheinu Miskaven worse? So the reason they're assuming it's worse is because if it's Davar Sheinu Miskaven, if it's definitely going to happen, what we call Psik Reisha. So there the Gemara says, Mo de Rib Shimon b'Psik Reisha. The Rib Shimon will agree, he'll acknowledge, that if it's a Psik Reisha, then it's still Asa. Right? So, Malach Hashem Tzrich L'Gufa is always a Psik Reisha, essentially, because Malach Hashem Tzrich Psik Reisha addresses the question of will the Malacha definitely happen. Right? In the case of Malach Hashem Tzrich L'Gufa, it always happens. You know it's going to happen. You're trying to do it. Right, so it includes a psik reisha. So here, Malach Hashem Tzrich L'Gufa is pater, and psik reisha of a davar Hashem Misgavin is chayiv. So a davar Hashem Misgavin with a psik reisha seems to be worse than a Malach Hashem Tzrich L'Gufa. And this distinction, it would come out that Malach Hashem Tzrich L'Gufa is worse. That's their question. Aaron, what do you want to say?
I thought we started by saying davar Hashem Misgavin is worse.
That's their premise. Their premise is that Davar Sheinu Miskaven. Sorry?
Who's premise?
The ones who ask on this cast of Mishnah, the Kapos Tamarim and the Mekevus HaMishnah and many others.
Doesn't tell us about Psik Reisha that even though it's only us and Derabanan because it's a Malach Hashem Tzrich L'Gufa?
Oh, so whether they, to what extent they become each other is that's part of the background here, right? That there's some similarity and we're trying to figure out what the difference is between the two terms. So the cast of Mishnah distinguishes between the two terms in this way. Now you're right that there's a possibility of combining the two terms, we'll get to that in a second, but if this distinction is true, if they're not the same thing, so according to the kasha these achronim are asking, is that they're assuming psik reisha of a davar Sheinu Miskaven is worse, and this distinction makes Malach Hashem Tzrich L'Gufa for us. So there are a couple ways to answer the question, but just before you even get to it, one could argue with the whole premise. Right, one could say, well, I'll give you a good argument why Malach Hashem Tzrich L'Gufa is worse. Because Rabbi Yehuda holds it's Asur. So therefore, if you hold with Rabbi Yehuda, the whole question falls away. Right? This question is only according to Rabbi Shimon. Now keep in mind, there is one Rishon who holds like Rabbi Yehuda. Who's that? The Rambam. Guess who the Kesef Mishnah is a commentary on? The Rambam. Guess who he's quoting? Rabbi Avraham ben Oshel HaRambam. Right, so it's very possible that his explanation is meant to be consistent with the Rambam.
And not his own opinion.
Well, his own opinion is a little bit vague. The truth is, the Kesef Mishnah, that's the Shulchan Aruch, is a little bit up for grabs. But, and this actually is another important point, though, that we were talking a few minutes ago about the Chumras HaIsser of Malach Hashem Tzrich L'Gufa. So you could also say that the Halacha L'Maiso, we might also treat it a little bit more Machmir, just because it's a machlokas rishonim. That's enough reason also. We'll say, listen, the Rambam holds this is a chiyuv daraisa. So all the other Darabbanans, the Rambam doesn't say that about. But here you have a Darabbanan which one very major rishon believes is a chiyuv daraisa. So that's another reason to treat it a little bit more stringently than other isurim. But in any event, so if you're working off the Rambam's position, this whole kasha doesn't have to be there. But, okay, let's assume it has to work for us too. Let's assume that Psik Reisha really seems to be worse, and this distinction requires explanation then. So why is it worse to do a Malacha, Davar Sheinu Miskaven, Psik Reisha, when you're not even trying to do the action, and Malacha Sheinu Tzrich L'Gufa, when you are trying to do the action, that's you're more off the hook. So many discuss this. Among those who discuss this is the Kadjig Lavei Rav. Right, we've mentioned him a couple times. You go on the fifth floor of the library, and you go up to 5A, and you come out the elevator, and you turn right. don't you think you turn left to go to the svarim, but instead turn right to go to the wall. So on the wall, you'll see a big picture of the Kodesh Glover Rav, because his brother dedicated the fifth floor of the library, 5A, in memory of him. So the Kodesh Glover Rav has a discussion about this in his Tshuva Saratzvi. And he says as follows. He says that what happens with the Pesik Resh, and we'll talk about this more, God willing, next week. What happens with the Devar Sheinu Miskaven and the Pesik Resh is, what does the Pesik Resh do? It essentially connects two actions into one. It basically means that if you know something is definitely going to happen, then you no longer say that these two actions are distinct actions. And it's like people say that guns don't kill people, people kill people. So let's say the inverse of that. Let's say somebody shoots somebody and says, well, I didn't do it, the gun did it, because I just pulled the trigger, I didn't shoot anybody. So you say, that's a joke. Pulling the trigger is what makes the gun go off. So you can't distinguish between pulling the trigger and the bullet coming out. It's all one thing. So one could argue that when we have a Pesik Resh situation where action A definitely leads to action B, that's the way it works. So then that's one action. You can't distinguish, I didn't send an email, I just pushed a button on the computer. The computer sent the email. You know that pushing send is what does it. That's how it works. So that's when it definitely happens that way, then you can't claim that you didn't do it. So essentially it all becomes one big action. So says the Kesef Mishnah, says the Kodesh Glover Rav in the Kesef Mishnah, that essentially, don't tell me that Melach Shein Tzrich L'Gufa is worse because you're doing the action with Kavana. Here, you're also doing the action with Kavana. You have Kavana to do action A. Action A and action B are now one entity, action AB. And you have Kavana, you have a Melacha with Kavana. Now the question is, so why is it still not a Melach Shein Tzrich L'Gufa itself?
Maybe.
It might be. So that's part of the issue.
But doesn't
say so we'll try. Yeah, so that's part of the point. You know, that it could be they combine at some point. That once you have a Pesik Resh, so then it becomes a Melacha. And then the question is, maybe that's where Nichalei and Lo Nichalei come in. That when it's Lo Nichalei, maybe then it becomes essentially a Melacha Shein Tzricha L'Guf. But you could also say, yeah?
So, does Eretz Zvi quote the Kovach Yerimer?
I don't think so. He was writing a little bit earlier. They were about contemporaries, but they both died in the Holocaust. But I don't think he quotes the Kovach Yerim at all. So, in any event, you could call attention to a few other things. For example, you could say that once you say like that Tavir Shein Miskaven is all one action, so it's still more chayav than a Melach Shein Tzrich L'Gufa, because the Melach Hashem Tzrich L'Gufa has an extra advantage that you're trying to do something else. That your Melacha is with a ulterior motive. And that there are those who understand that ulterior motives are worse than no intent. Because no intent, okay, so we can identify it with the general intent of the object, of the action. But when you have an ulterior motive, you want to do something else, so then that diverts your attention in a different direction. So if you had no intention whatsoever and you did a malacha, so maybe we could say, okay, default, you have the intent of the malacha. But if you have intent for some other purpose, that could divert the intention of the malacha, and maybe that's not called a malacha at all. There is another aspect to consider. There is a very long discussion about this by the Merkevus HaMishnah. Merkevus HaMishnah was written by Rav Shlomo LeMichalm, and despite the reputation of that city, he was a very, 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 very smart man. And he was a big bucky both in Torah and in Mada. And he says, someone's got to straighten out this issue. What is the difference between a Devar Sheinu Miskaven and a Melacha Shein Tzrich L'Gufa? It's all too confusing, so I have to work it out. So he has essentially about a 20-page essay, which seems to basically be one paragraph long. He doesn't really come up for air anywhere from the beginning till the end. I definitely feel free to read it. It's quite fascinating. He writes in a beautiful poetic style, and he has a lot of puns there. about how what he's taking on is a malacha tzricha legufa. He has a whole nice way of writing it, but he spends a lot of time trying to figure this out. And if I could boil it down into the one-minute version of the 20-page essay, so essentially he says like this. He says that it's basically 4 days in Rishonim as to what a malacha tzricha legufa is. He breaks things down even further. And he suggests, as a general definition, he quotes the philosophers who distinguish between primary intent and secondary intent. He says, if I paint my shirt green, I have a red shirt and I paint it green, so if I want it to be green, that's called primary intent. If I don't want it to be red, so I paint it green, that's called secondary intent. And he works off that distinction. And in the end, he essentially says like this. He says that really, davar she'eino miskaven and malacha she'eino tzricha legufa are two different points on a spectrum. They can't overlap in definitions because they don't apply to the same circumstance. He says everything is going to depend on whether something is objectively a tikkun or not. That some actions in life are objective tikkuns. They are self-evident as a tikkun. And some depend more on your intent. So if something is objectively a tikkun, so then it's a candidate for psik reisha, davar she'eino miskaven and psik reisha. That if you did it on purpose, if you did it as a result of something else, davar she'eino miskaven, you're off the hook. But if it's a psik reisha, it's definitely going to happen, you're on the hook. And because it's an objective tikkun, you're in trouble. But when something is not an objective tikkun, there are some areas of life where it's only a tikkun because you want it. And if you don't want it, it's not a tikkun. So there, those are the areas where malacha she'eino tzricha legufa could be relevant. But psik reisha can never be relevant, because even if you end up doing it as a psik reisha, but you're not interested in it, so then it's not going to be considered a tikkun. So essentially, that's his distinction, different than the Kesef Mishnah. He says that there are some areas that are candidates for psik reisha, and there are some areas that are candidates for malacha she'eino tzricha legufa, and they're not the same areas. Again, just to restate it, the question that basically if it's an objective tikkun, then that's where psik reisha comes in. That if it wasn't definitely going to happen, maybe you're off the hook, but if it's definitely going to happen, you're on the hook because it's a clear tikkun, and your intent doesn't really matter. Your purpose doesn't really matter. And if it's something that is purpose-defined, so then if your purpose is different, it's a malacha she'eino tzricha legufa, and psik reisha is not relevant because either way it'll still be a malacha she'eino tzricha legufa, and never the twain shall meet. Hi.
It sounds nice, but what's the connection between something being a primary intent of tikkun or not? Is that only as good as the defined malacha she'eino tzricha legufa?
Yeah, that's a part of it. Yeah, that's a part of how he's defining malacha she'eino tzricha legufa, and then within that, so he says, so it only comes up when you have actions that are subject to those kinds of divisions, but some actions are not subject to those kind of divisions. So he says you have to look at all the actions and divide them up. That when they're objective tikkuns that are invulnerable to your intent or lack of intent, then you could talk about psik reisha. And when they're not, then you could talk about malacha she'eino tzricha legufa. And essentially, they're two different realms and they have different applications. Okay, so with that, we've now set the stage to talk a little bit more about davar she'eino miskaven and psik reisha. Okay, you heard about it a little bit at Tzitzim today. So Be'ez Hashem, that we'll pick up with on Tuesday night, after the night after the dinner. So just the next few minutes, just quickly review what we spoke about, and then God willing, we'll start this new topic of davar she'eino miskaven on Tuesday. So what did we speak about today? So we talked about the question of if we assume that there is an issa d'rabbanan of malacha she'eino tzricha legufa, is it treated like a normal issa d'rabbanan with all the kulas that go along with that? Or is it a more chumer version? And maybe even an issa d'raisa that's simply pater, but really pretty strictly prohibited. So we talked about some nafkaminas, about the Rishonim who say that it's not mutter for the sake of a chola, about the possibility it's not mutter ben hashmashos. And in the other direction, we saw those who argued that it is permitted for the sake of kavod abrios. That was the view of the Dvar Yehoshua. And the Magen Avraham seems to understand that it's mutter b'makom tzar. And then we discussed, or Shechter's discussion about whether it's a malacha d'rabbanan or an isser d'rabbanan, and that would also affect the question of chola, and therefore that basically put him at odds with the Meiri, because the Meiri asks, why do we not allow it for a chola? And he gave three explanations that are relevant to that situation to basically answer it up without arguing on the premise. And Rav Schechter's premise is different, that we wouldn't allow it because it's a malacha d'rabbanan and it's not subject to such heterim. And then we talked about the question of, we also mentioned that another reason to be machmir in halacha, at least the halacha l'maisa nowadays, is as opposed to other yisurim d'rabbanan, there is a major view in Rishonim and in the Mishnah that it's echiv d'raisa. So that may also be another reason to be more machmir about it, because it doesn't have the same type of clear go ahead as other actions do. Then we talked about the difference between a malacha shein shriach legufa and a davar shein miskaven with the psik reisha, and we mentioned the most common explanation is the one expressed by the Kesef Mishnah, that a malacha shein shriach legufa, you're trying to do the malacha, but you're doing it for a different purpose, and davar shein miskaven, you're trying to do action A, which is mutter, but action A may bring about action B, which is a malacha, and if it's psik reisha, it's definitely going to happen. So the question is, that explanation seems to make malacha shein shriach legufa worse, because you're doing the malacha knowingly, as opposed to a davar shein miskaven, we are not intentionally doing the malacha. And that bothers us only because we assume that psik reisha is worse. Davar shein miskaven is worse, because with a psik reisha, you're chayiv, and malacha shein shriach legufa is always psik reisha, so that's where you should combine it with, that's where you should compare the two in the psik reisha sense. And in that case, davar shein miskaven is chayiv, and malacha shein shriach legufa is patur. So you said, we noted that you could say the question falls away if you hold the malacha shein shriach legufa is chayiv, and that's taka the view of the Rambam, and the Kesef Mishnah is commenting on the Rambam and quoting his son, so that could answer it. But besides that, you could say that no, it's not that the davar shein miskaven is done without any intent, it's done with intent, because action B becomes connected to action A, so it's all one action which you did on purpose, so therefore essentially, you've done the malacha with intent. Now, maybe we should still call it a malacha shein shriach legufa, though. So, one point we noted is that maybe malacha shein shriach legufa is worse, because, or is better, in a sense, is less than malacha, because your intent is diverted in a different direction, as opposed to here, where you have a blank space, which can be addressed to your own intent, and you can be chayav for it. And then we mentioned in Merkavas HaMishnah, this very lengthy essay, where he essentially says that a malacha shein shriach legufa and a psik reisha, davar shein miskaven, are two separate things. But if something is an objective tikkun, so then it's subject to the possible chiyuv of psik reisha. And if something is not an objective tikkun, so then psik reisha is not going to make a difference, because you'll still be lacking the kavana to make it a malacha. But that's where malacha shein shriach legufa becomes a definitive term, that if you're doing it legufa, it's a malacha, and if you're doing it not legufa, then perhaps it's not. All right, so I wish you a wonderful Shabbos. Again, next time we'll meet, by one will be Tuesday and at 7:30. And probably we'll end up doing Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday next week in order to...
What was the last day for the primary 10th?
Yeah, the point was that...